This is the third part of Cannibals for Dinner. The monsoon began about 30 minutes after they got into the car. It poured so hard that the windshield wipers couldn't keep up. Ron and Claire looked at each other in disbelief. It could not be again raining this hard. Dirk's birthday, April's unbirthday, and now Ron's afterbirthday. Each requiring a drive of over an hour, and each accompanied by this torrential downpour that followed them like a shadow whenever they met up with the Crenshaws. Ron was driving and Claire was quiet, not for any particularly reason, except that rain like this while in a car was frightening. She was glad that Ron was driving. Fear made her do rash things. Ron didn't seem frightened, but he was deep in concentration mode. Claire's theory of traffic accidents occurring more often in the rain probably had something to do with it. There was flooding at the junction of Interstates 80 and 287. Ron looked for a place where the asphalt crested. He could see that cars had gone through the water over their tires and had to pull over. He wondered if civil engineers accounted for flooding exits the way they did on the main highway. An hour later, the mixture of weather and the evening commute left them stranded, creeping block by block. "We're going to be at least 30 minutes late," said Ron. "Let's try and call the restaurant." Claire reached for the phone, thinking to herself, "Oh no, not again." But instead, she dialed 411. "And then press send," said Ron. "It says that you were out of money," she said, handing him the phone. Since they were unable to get cell service at home, Ron had opted for a pay-as-you-go plan that was much less expensive and carried with it no contract. The downside to this was that when your time was up or 30 days had passed, you were cut off till you fed them more money. Claire couldn't figure it out. It just won't do anything. Technology frustrated her, and her frustration angered Ron. She put the phone down on the console between them. She knew he would fix it. It took about 10 different clicks for Ron to add money from the existing credit card number they had on file. He handed the phone back to Claire. "Did you write the phone number for the restaurant down when you copied the address?" "No," said Claire. She knew this would annoy him, but hoped he wouldn't continue. They were going to be late. There was nothing that could be done about it. She knew that he was hoping for some kind of a seaporting, but since that wasn't going to happen, she hoped that things would not turn ugly between them. "You have no idea how much I hate this," said Ron. Maybe she could try nursing him through. "I know exactly how much you hate it. It's palpable." Information informed her that there was no such listing for the restaurant. Claire said, "You spoke to these people, right? This isn't one of those websites for something that has gone out of business, is it?" "I spoke with George, the owner, last week." "Well, there's no listing." "You don't have April's cell number, do you?" She knew the question was a mistake as soon as the words left her mouth, and she tried to swallow them back down. "Do you think that if I had her number, that we wouldn't have already called her?" Claire considered. Sarcastic, but not yet over the top. "Yes," she replied. After another 10 minutes of crawling at less than 5 miles an hour, with at least 10 miles to go, Ron suggested that maybe they should try information for April or Russ's cell phone number. There was no listing for either of them. Ron was growing more tense by the second. He could envision his friends sitting at a table, being asked for the third time if they were ready to order. The image made him cringe. They would never show annoyance, or actually be annoyed for that matter. The weather was horrible. But Ron still tormented himself for his poor planning. How could he have known the sky would open up? The fact that he couldn't know didn't matter. 5 minutes later, the cell phone rang. It was April. They were having issues as well. Well, they weren't at the restaurant yet. Ron felt an ease cover him like his favorite silk sheets. They hadn't inconvenienced anyone by their tardiness. Ron and Claire were settled when the Crenshaws arrived. "Can you believe that it's raining again?" said Claire. April responded with a smile. "It must be a metaphor for something." Ron's mind played Riders on the Storm, then Dylan's Buckets of Rain, then Phil Collins' I Wish It Would Rain Down. Mentally, he kicked Phil in his testicles. Couldn't that do that to Jim Morrison? And the revenge that Dylan would take on his mind for the thought was unthinkable. So Phil Collins got the brunt of his wrath. "We had a rough day with Margaret," said April. Margaret was the reason that Ron had chosen this restaurant, closer to their house. Both he and Claire knew that it was difficult for April and Russ to leave for long periods of time, and seeing them was always worth the drive. "So, I hear you were going to tutor Claire," Ron said to Russ. For a second, Russ didn't pick up on what Ron meant, which made him wonder if April consulted him before volunteering his time. "With the iPad," said April. "Oh, absolutely," said Russ. "The next time we are together, just bring yours, or I'll have mine. We'll have you all up and running in no time at all." Claire and Russ began discussing appetizers, while Ron and April exchanged a smile, unique to them. As of that morning, they had exchanged 721 emails over the past 2 years. Ron grinned his best dimpled smile and said, "You hollered at me for being mean to Dr. Dan." He knew that she was protective of her friends and loved her for it. Claire convinced him that his social absurdities were always on the brink of getting him into trouble. "I would never holler at you, unless, of course, you wanted me to," said April, with a twinkle in her eye. But think about it from his perspective. Here he was, seated at a table with good friends and family, who have spent a lot of time with each other, know each other, share inside jokes with each other. He is like someone who has literally come in from out of the rain. And I know for a fact that he respects nurses and janitors and goes out of his way to let them know that. He is a gentleman. So yes, I thought you were harsh. Ron gazed at her perfectly oval face for a brief instant, remembered a time when they lay in bed together, her boyfriend in the next room. He was emaciated and broken. She was lying there and stroking his face. He thought it might have been the first time that they met. April was clearly one of the loves of his life, but they had a relationship that redefined love. Love could be abstinence with a certain amount of shared sexual experience. The four of them had that now, with music and food and plays and films and tender conversations. Tensions can be filled with loyalty, deference, acceptance, and intimacy. A submission to the idea that they enjoyed each other enough to feel that pull brings one willingly back time and again. The appetizers were ordered. The conversation didn't lag as they ate. Russ popped the bottle of champagne that he had brought with them. Ron said, "Isn't it strange that neither of us is usually late, and then we both are at the same time? What are the odds on that?" "We're just synchronized," said Russ.
"Like swimmers," said Claire.
Ron pictured them all upside down in the pool, legs extended in unison, doing splits. Ron wondered if Russ's hair looked thinner after it was wet.
His did.
Claire's did. April didn't have any much hair for it to make a difference. The conversation naturally turned to Claire's health. They had all been concerned. She had seen a pulmonologist that morning. He wanted her to see a rheumatologist. This would make the third different specialist that she had seen, not counting her primary doctor. Her voice was still not quite right, and now the tips of her fingers were beginning to split again. They had only improved while she was on the steroids that she hated. "This thing has really kicked my ass," said Claire. "I can't help but think that if I was 20 years younger, that I would have been sick for 2 weeks, taken the meds, and it would be over."
"They still haven't figured out what's going on with your hands," said April.
"Some kind of autoimmune thing. Who knows? They certainly don't seem to. That's the frustrating part." Ron wondered if talks of doctors and illnesses came with their age. April had recently had cataract surgery, as had Russ. Ron had a lymph node cut out of the back of his neck not long ago. Was this what happened? Your doctor visits became so frequent that they were an ever-growing aspect of your life and therefore made up a large part of your social conversations? While he was thinking his thoughts, Claire continued. "He read the memory card and said that if I'm still having apnea, even with the CPAP, some of the breathing interruptions are lasting as long as 1 minute."
"That's a long time," answered Russ, who also used a CPAP.
Ron returned to the conversation by commenting, "Of course, Claire makes me feel as if the reason she has to use it is that I can't stand her snoring. I used to lie in bed at night and listen to her stop breathing and then wait for her to start again. That is not fun." They all laughed. He had lightened the mood. The talk of illness. April joined in the joke by telling that Russ's snoring was famous. "We had a former next-door neighbor ask what the sound was that she heard in the middle of the night coming from our bedroom windows. I told her it was Russ, and she couldn't believe that it was a human sound. Frankly, neither could I some nights."
"She said that?" said Ron. "She actually said that Russ didn't sound human?"
Russ steepled his fingers in front of him and then interlaced them.
"Indeed she did."
"Isn't that a tad rude?" said Ron.
"She was the queen of rude," said April.
She was also a shameless self-promoter. She gave out a business card, claiming to be an internationally renowned artist, all because her daughter married a man from Holland, and she gave them a painting. That made her an international artist. She invited Muriel and me to one of her shows, and it was awful. It looked like something a child did in school, and the parents put it up on the refrigerator. Muriel leaned over to me as we walked around and said, "This is one time I really wish you spoke another language."
"So you could speak more freely?" asked Claire.
"Honestly is more like it," said April. She also used to flirt shamelessly with me all the time. She used to think it was chic. I told Russ, "Let her really try. I would love it.
I am so ready to call her bluff. She has no idea of who she is playing with. She treated me like a child. Sex as a weapon, grinned Ron. This was to his liking. Absolutely, said April, knowing that he liked it. Ron laughed. Some things never change. April blushed and laughed. That is not such a bad thing, is it? Tonight, in honor of Ron's birthday, Claire looked particularly beautiful. She was wearing a ribbon and linen embroidered what she would call shabby chic, peasant-style dress. It was blue-gray in hue and set off with a polka-dot blue and white flats. April, having only seen her seated, told her, "Your top is beautiful." "It's a dress," Claire said. And knowing how April loves shoes, she said, "You have to look at my shoes." She got up and spread her lifted skirt to show her shoes. April smiled her approval. Ron watched her hips sway as she walked to the ladies' room and the swish of her skirts. He stared at her from the rear whenever she walked away. April gazed as Russ smiled at her. There was definitely something at this table. A shared love? Ron got up to have a cigarette. There was an awning and a wet street with flooded flower pots in fashionable, though colonial, Westfield. As Ron inhaled, he thought about his time in this very pretentious and yet provocative town. Before he'd been with Claire, his best friends had come from here. They exuded a certain confidence that they were born with and that the place inspired. The exhale drew a sigh. It was now history. Back inside, dessert was being served. The linguine and clam sauce, the crab cakes, and the New England broil of shrimp, flounder, lobster, and scallops had been removed. They were replaced by a frozen mango concoction. Russ and April shared a cappuccino mousse. Ron now opened the gifts that they had brought for him. There was a card he turned over and over, and three firing line DVDs from 1969, which featured William F. Buckley with Noam Chomsky, Norman Mailer, and Saul Alinsky. Ron longed for those days of cogent debate on topics of social importance, days when they were discussed at a high level of linguistic acuity. April, he knew, had chosen these three carefully and with purposefulness. He liked that. Claire and Russ divided the check without a hitch. As they left the restaurant, April said, "Ronald, you're going to get drenched." In reaction, Ron reached for one of the magnificently large table umbrellas that had been stashed against the wall. "I know, it's a little large," he clowned. Russ and April laughed. Claire was already out the door. Ron reached for the umbrella stand and pulled out a silver-backed rain shield. It stopped raining, and the four of them crossed the street together. Synchronicity. They were parked next to each other. Russ and Ron shook hands. April and Claire embraced. Then Ron and April kissed as Russ and Claire followed suit. April turned to Ron, kissed him again, whispered happy birthday in his ear, and they got into their cars and drove off in opposite directions.